They say it takes a village to raise a child. They, referring to a wise African proverb, and the village, meaning a community of family, friends, neighbors, and loved ones to help nurture a child in a safe environment. Growing up in a big family, being a mom was something I had dreamed of since a very young age. Little did I know, all those years of imagining what motherhood would be like, that when it came time for me to have a child, I would be in a faraway country, wondering where my village was. My son was born in October of 2019 in Dubai. It was an easy pregnancy, not a great deal of morning sickness, and my cravings were relatively normal foods like watermelon and the British staple fish and chips. But then came the 18 hours of active labor and an emergency C-section that followed. I spent weeks in bed recovering. It seriously felt like I was hit by a massive bus filled with bricks. And right after impact, I was given the most precious gift ever imaginable, my sweet baby boy. My body looked different. I was different. My thoughts were different. My thoughts were also very hypersensitive to this beautiful new child that was a part of my life now. I was barely taking it day by day. Then the day came where my husband, who's an airline pilot, had to go back to work. He was scheduled for a 5-day trip, of course, that took him to South America, Europe, and then back to Dubai. I was determined to be strong and to hold down the fort for my son and I. But by day 3, I was a hopeless wreck, crying on the kitchen floor with the sink water running over a huge pile of dirty dishes. My house was a mess and I couldn't find a moment to take a shower or to do laundry or to cook, let alone clean. I laid there on the kitchen floor while my son was sleeping in his bassinet in the living room, and I was wondering, where was this damn village? I grabbed my phone and thought about calling my mom, who was on the other side of the world, in America, but I stopped myself and thought that my situation would probably make her feel very sad. Instead, I swiped over to my Apple Music app to find music to help me get through it. My playlist, pre-baby, did not appeal to me. So then, I typed in motherhood, hoping that a mom out there wrote a song that I could relate to. To my surprise and curiosity, I saw a motherhood podcast. I clicked on it. I listened for about 5 minutes before I realized the water was still running. I jumped up, completely forgetting about my C-section scar. Throughout the next couple of days, I found myself tuning into the podcast during baby nap and feeding times, immersing myself into the conversations that mothers had about their journey. I heard stories from moms who had miscarriages, stories of adoption, infertility, postpartum depression, mothers who offered great tips and advice, while other moms shared their research and experiences on child development. My mind was blown. When my husband, Eddie, finally came home, to his surprise, found me in a place where the house wasn't a complete disaster. It was still a mess, but not as bad as he expected. And I still had my sanity intact. He smiled at me and said, Daisy, I think you found your village. Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Atlantic Aviation. Atlantic Aviation provides aircraft ground support in over 60 locations across the U.S. I'm proud to be partnered with a company that puts their people first and values diversity and inclusion. Their vision and mission is evident through the various resource programs they support. Experience the Atlantic Attitude today. Check out atlanticaviation.com to see all 60-plus locations and plan your next visit. Today's guest is Liz Booker. Liz is a pilot, writer for children and young adults, and a mother of three. In 2019, Liz retired from a 28-year career in the United States Coast Guard as a helicopter pilot and foreign diplomat to write full-time. She holds a master's in public administration from Harvard University, a master's of fine arts in writing from Vermont College of Fine Arts, and she holds her commercial fixed and rotary wing licenses. Liz is the host of the Aviatrix Book Club, Aviatrix Book Review podcast, where she interviews authors of books featuring women in aviation, and the Aviatrix Book Review website, with over 500 books featuring women in aviation and space in all genres for all ages. Hi, Liz. Thank you for joining the conversation at the Aviate with Shasta podcast.
Hey, Shasta. Thanks for having me.
So, Liz, what is your story, especially leading up to your incredible career that you have had in the U.S. Coast Guard?
My story. Okay. I knew I wanted to be a pilot when I was 5 years old. I took some detours as a teenager and ended up dropping out of high school and tried to enlist in the other services. I started with the Navy because I had been in Navy junior ROTC in high school. And at the time, it was the end of the first Gulf War and the services were drawing down. So they weren't taking GEDs, which is what I had. The Navy recruiter called me back and said he had set up an appointment with the Coast Guard recruiter. So I enlisted in the Coast Guard when I was 18. And I spent 5 years enlisted working on ships. I did 1 year ashore during that time and applied to officer candidate school. And when I got accepted on my second application to officer candidate school, I realized that as an officer, I could apply to flight school and fulfill that childhood dream of flying. And so I did, and I went to flight school with the Navy. That took about a year and a half, where we flew fixed wing and rotary wing aircraft. And then I went to my first operational unit after that as a helicopter pilot and served 4 years in San Francisco, 4 years in Miami, took a break to go to grad school and do an admin job as a payback for that. And then I was the chief pilot in Los Angeles for 3 years. And then I did some other cool things in the Coast Guard too.
Oh, I'm sure. What was it like flying helicopters for the U.S. Coast Guard?
It was awesome. you know, it's a pretty fancy machine. It has all the bells and whistles. The only challenge with that aircraft is that it's a little underpowered for the mission sometimes in terms of its engine and main gearbox capacity to carry a heavy load. So it's a short range recovery helicopter. The MH-65 Dolphin, it's an AS-365 American Eurocopter. And, you know, the missions that we did were really cool. We, you know, the Coast Guard is known for, and the thing that I take the most pride in from my career is search and rescue. So when people are in distress out on the water, we would go launch. I stood duty like kind of like a firehouse. I would go in the afternoon on one day and spend the night, so 24-hour duty day. And we'd have a training mission or something scheduled in the evening and maybe one in the morning. But in the middle of the night, if the search and rescue alarm went off, we had 30 minutes to get airborne. So we'd go out, pre-flight the plane, check the weather, make sure that it was safe to go out, and then we'd go and hopefully find whoever we were looking for and help them if we could. So hoisting at low altitude over the water at night. We also deployed to ships. So I got to, you know, do a lot of deck landings on the backs of Coast Guard ships, some that are smaller than others. And usually those missions were looking for illicit trafficking, either migrants on their way to the United States, definitely down here in the South Florida region, looking for Haitians and Cubans at the time who were trying to come to the U.S., and then a lot of illicit trafficking of narcotics from Central and South America.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible. Like, you are a pilot, but you also have this hat where you're serving for the U.S. military and you do those operations too. So I think that's really cool that you've had those experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited to talk to you about motherhood. I am a new mom and I know that you're a mother of three. And before we kind of dive into it, I just want to say, so in aviation, I have met some women who either they just cannot wait to be a mom. And at the same time, I've met a lot of women who are just okay with not being a mom and having children. Both options are valid. Did you always want to be a mom?
I'm going to go with no. At the time that I had my first child, well, let's just, first of all, before we get into this, be clear about a few things. First of all, I have a very unusual experience. I had three children under three sort of separate phases of my career and my life. Each were 10 years apart. So I, you know, hopefully one of those experiences somebody can relate to, probably not all three. And a couple disclaimers. First of all, at no point in my 28 years of being a mother have I ever even been nominated for, much less won, Mother of the Year. I mean, it's been a hot mess. It's been trial and error. And then, you know, the other thing I want to make sure that's clear is, like, you know, every, like you said, some women want to have children, some women don't, some women can't, some women adopt, you know, and different family dynamics and different support systems. And so no two experiences look the same. There might be some common threads, but, you know, I think the most important thing that we can do as women who are trying to navigate this is talk about it. Yeah. And that was really hard for me when I was a junior enlisted woman in the military because I didn't have access to a lot of other women. I grew up as an only child, and so I didn't have the experience of, like, watching someone take care of a baby, and I was very young. So all of these things, just to say, hey, you know, we all have different experiences, and you just have to kind of talk to people if you have access to them, which you do now. You know, 30 years ago, we didn't. Now you do. You can find your tribe and talk to people and get ideas. You have instant access to advice from lots of women out there. So it's really great.
Yeah.
But the answer to the question is no. I was not planning to have children at the time that I first had my first baby. But later on, I did. I wanted more. So it's a mixed bag.
That's sweet. Oh, we'll get into that here soon. But looking back, I found myself flip-flopping back and forth on whether or not I wanted to have children. And it was very dependent on where I was with either my education, the work I was doing with the nonprofit, my flying. And I just wasn't sure until I completed the global flight where I was like, okay, it's time for me to establish some roots and enter that chapter of motherhood. So, I agree with you. The dialogue for motherhood, especially in aviation, is so critical. When I first became a mom, I found myself living in a different country, and that was totally unexpected. Of like what I originally had thought of what, you know, that chapter in my life would look like. So not only do we have different stories, but what ends up happening in reality, when you do enter that chapter, or if you do, it could be completely different from what you anticipated. So, again, the dialogue that we can have amongst each other is what's really going to help us in our own unique situations.
Yeah.
So initially, when you found out you were going to be a mom, what was going through your mind in terms of your career?
Okay. Well, I was 20. I think I was 19 when I actually found out I was pregnant. In 20, when I had my first child, I had only been in the Coast Guard for a year and a half. And like I said, I was enlisted. I was working on ships. And so I was kind of terrified, to be frank. And yeah. I wasn't ready to get married. But father and I talked about it, and I accepted the responsibility when I made the decision that, you know, we were going to go ahead with it. I accepted the responsibility that I potentially could be on my own with the baby.
Okay.
And that was something that was scary, but that I took on. And my ex-husband and I were together for a couple of years, and it didn't work out. But we co-parented. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
We weren't great yeah. at it, but we co-parented. But my son stayed with me as when we separated, and spent his childhood in my home and would spend summers with his dad. So I was scared. Didn't know what – I mean, I had no information about how that looked in the Coast Guard, so I kind of had to navigate that on my own. Wow. The people in leadership positions who I was working for didn't really know how to handle it either. So I had to learn the policy myself and walk them through it. I was very fortunate to have somebody in a position of power who recognized my potential and made sure that I had access to a critical training opportunity while I was pregnant to keep me in forward motion career-wise that early on. So I got to go to, we call it an A school for enlisted folks, and learn a specialty, which was ship navigation. So I did that.
Okay.
And I was fortunate to spend a year on land after I had the baby, coordinating search and rescue from, you know, the radio room where the Mayday call comes in, you send out the assets. So I got to do that for a year before I got back underway. And then okay. I got underway with a baby, one-year-old baby at home. And his father was also in the Coast Guard. So he had duty. Like, he would stand where I was explaining in the aircraft, I would stand for 24 hours. He would go on duty for 48 to 72 hours. And I would be underway for 8 weeks to 10 weeks at a time. And that was probably the hardest time of my life, was leaving my baby at home and getting underway. But what it did for me is it motivated me to do really, really well and be super professional, work really hard, and apply for Officer Candidate School, because Officer Candidate School for me was an opportunity for me to get a land billet in the military and not have to be underway and leave my baby at home. And so I did. I got super serious about it. And I applied, like I said, 2 times. The Coast Guard has a program where you can apply for Officer Candidate School without a bachelor's degree. You have to have 30 college credits, and you have to be an E5, which is the second rank that you can get coming out of boot camp. And you have to be in for 4 years. And so I went at 5 years to Officer Candidate School. And that's when I said, you know, I spent a year in Port Angeles doing more surface operations stuff in an office before I got to go to flight school. But that's, you know, I took my baby. My baby was now like 5 years old, and took him with me to flight school. And my husband now moved with me. We weren't married yet, but we got married when I was in flight school.
Oh, wow. You know, it blows my mind away how women, we already have the challenges of being on this journey to fulfilling whatever it is that we want to fulfill career-wise. But then you factor in stuff like leaving your child at home. And, you know, sometimes people are doing it on their own. They're a single parent. And just like the resilience, the stories, it's so inspirational. It gives you so much motivation. It just, when it gets hard, to keep going. And I think that that's such a special piece of your story that I haven't heard through the interviews that I've listened to in preparation for our meeting. But it's a beautiful one, and it's a strong one, especially about resilience and working hard. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
What were some of the concerns that you had entering the motherhood chapter? I know you shared a little bit with us, but was there anything that really stood out in your mind as a mom concern when, in terms of your career?
Well, so, I mean, I've already talked about kind of how I responded to being pregnant that young and how it motivated me. I mean, my ex-husband wanted me to get out of the Coast Guard and stay home and take care of the baby. And I just, for me, that was not a good idea. And plus, I still yeah. owed the Coast Guard time. And so my concerns were, how am I going to take care of the baby when I'm not home? Like, how do I navigate yeah. that? And I was fortunate to find another mom in the whose husband was in the Coast Guard who had a small child his age, and she welcomed the money. So over half my pay during that period of my life went to childcare, but I knew that if I stuck with it in the long term, I could provide for him. So then when I got to planning my second child 10 years later as a junior pilot, my concerns then were the timing with my progression in the aircraft. You know, there's a very clear progression line for pilots in the Coast Guard. You do flight school, you get your transition training to your aircraft, you go to your operational unit, and you have about 2 years of upgrades. You upgrade from a co-pilot to a first pilot, which means that you can operate the aircraft on your own, but only during the daytime and some other roles. It's just one step closer to pilot in command, so aircraft commander. And I wanted to time having a child after I made aircraft commander because I didn't want to interrupt that progression, mm-hmm. but I wanted to have the baby before I showed up to a new unit because I didn't want to show up at another operational unit, you know, with a big fat belly and, you know, I'm useless to them for the next 5 months while I'm out of the aircraft. I did fly for okay. 5 months with my daughter because we can do that in the Coast Guard, and I was healthy and I felt good. And then, when I got to about 5.5 months, I had a simulator hop, you know, my annual simulator hop. I got vertigo in the simulator while I was pregnant. And, you know, it's like I could have gotten vertigo on any given day in the simulator, but
yeah.
it was definitely pronounced when I was pregnant. And so I took myself off the schedule after that. But those were like my concerns was like, how am I don't want to let my team down, you know, because they need us. The very tight crew makeup at a small operational Coast Guard unit. I didn't want to let them down. They were my friends and my peers, and I didn't want them to have increased workload. So I put a lot of pressure on myself that way. I was worried about, you know, being out of the aircraft, how it would affect, you know, my hours and those kinds of things, just all the things that a pilot has to worry about, you know, and then the physical recovery of it, and then getting back into the plane when you haven't flown for a few months, you know, and knocking the rust off, like all those things are stressful. They're extra.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. You know, because I think that dialogue is not out there as much as we want it to be. I want people to know it's okay that you have concerns. It's normal. They're going to be those concerns. And kind of like what you did, you just take it one step at a time and you figure out solutions. You lean on the people around you. You lean on the policies or the structures that are there for your company. You know, like there will be a little crack of light somewhere to help you and to bring relief. But I've just had this picture in my head once I became a mom that everyone just knows what to do and it's natural and your concerns are just exaggerated from like your emotions. And as I started to kind of unpiece all of this, I thought, oh my gosh, every mom has these concerns. We're just not as vocal about it, but it's okay. It's such a big transition. But you just get through it one step at a time.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even talk about like from the moment of inception, you know, the moment you find out that you're pregnant, you live under constant fear, you know, like is the baby, you know, is the baby okay? Am I going to miscarry? I had 5 pregnancies, so I miscarried twice. So, you know, and then it just, that never stops. I have a 28-year-old now and I still fear for him. So that will be with you the rest of your life.
Yeah. You know, motherhood is such a dynamic topic because, yes, there are mothers who have miscarriages. And aviation is a very high-stress work environment. And, you know, it happens. But again, we don't hear about how do these women cope and are there resources out there to help them? And so I'm just really pushing to have more conversations like this. But
I want to circle back to that experience, though, like please. For what you're talking about, having these conversations. I did that in complete isolation. I had no access to any other women in aviation who had had children. And so I'm like asking the guys, hey, you know, I'm like, wow, I want to have a baby. How do I do this?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they would all tell me to go call this one lady who was a senior officer at another unit who I had never met. And there was no way I was going to call this woman and ask her for family planning advice because that's just not in the culture. It wasn't at the time in the culture, in the military. And so after I had my daughter was when I was like, this is so stupid. I am not the first person who has ever done this. And so I reached out to every woman in the Coast Guard who had had a baby, and there were about 10 of us at the time.
Okay.
And I asked them to share their stories. And I gave them a questionnaire. I was like, you know, how did you go about family planning? How did it go for you? How did the conversation with your command go? What's your support system look like? How do you handle deploying and nursing and childcare? And what's a bad day look like? And how do you handle it? All that stuff. And they generously provided those stories and we put them in a book and then we updated it five years later and we had about 25 women.
Incredible.
So that was the medium that we were able to use then. And like I said, now you have instant access in so many fora on social media to network and ask questions. So use it.
Yeah, I love that. Taking those experiences, putting it in a book so that other women can refer to it if they were to go into the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
So when I was pregnant with my son, I was living in Dubai, far away from my family and community. I seriously had no clue what to expect, even though my mom had 6 kids. It's different when you're, you know, one of the siblings versus the only mom. Mm-hmm. And I try to go back and think about the conversations that I had with women in aviation, trying to remember any mention of how they did it, and nothing stood out to me. Why is it that women in aviation hardly publicly speak about their motherhood journey? Do you think it's personal preference, or maybe it's just something that's not encouraged or asked of women?
I have some ideas about that. Just thinking, you know, in any profession, and particularly male-dominated professions, you know, your children are the thing that are at home. That's your home life, and you have your work life. And you don't bring your home life to your work life. You keep that separate. Nobody wants to hear about how, you know, your kid was screaming and you couldn't get them in the car, you know, to go to daycare. Or for me, your kid literally was latched onto your leg screaming at daycare and you're trying to, you know, soothe them and separate them from your leg, you know, but you have a meeting you have to get to. You have to get to the morning brief. And when you roll into that morning brief, you better be put together and have compartmentalized all that stuff and left it at home. And we do that. And when we we do that to conform to this male culture that we are operating in. I mean, that's right. I think really the culture that we have had to integrate into. And so, and when you're in the plane, you know, you can't be worried about what baby's doing. Like your brain has to be on task. So you have to be really good at compartmentalizing. And as a result, we don't talk to each other. Like we don't talk to each other about, you know, our personal stuff. We keep our personal stuff separate. And I suffered because of that, because there were so many things I didn't know. So many things I didn't know that I had to figure out on my own, which is so dumb because, again, not the first person who ever did this, you know?
Right.
But you do have a lot of resources. Like I said, people are a lot more open. You know, I watch the conversations on, you know, sites like Female Aviators Sticking Together and The Lady Aviators. Yeah. And people are a lot more open about asking questions now because there's not that pressure of it being a purely professional environment. It's a forum for you to ask your questions and people will answer. They will answer. Right. And I love reading that. It's so great.
I love the answers. It's, you know, you get a mix of everything, some humor, some really great advice. But, you know, I think you put it really well, that we compartmentalize a lot. And because it is a male dominated industry, you know, we're in a professional environment and, you know, we're trying to keep those two things home and work separate. But I feel like we're doing injustice here because women, if we want more women to be a part of the workforce, the aviation workforce, we need to create an environment where women can feel like they can show up as themselves. And by not having those conversations at work, I mean, not where it gets to a point where it's unprofessionally, but we aren't having that dialogue at work. You know, it always takes me back to, you know, how are young girls viewing aviation? And if they see that it's this male-dominated industry and people are not talking about motherhood, which is something a lot of women look up, aspire to have in their life, and we're not talking about it at work, it's just closing that door to so many young people to get into this industry. So I think you put it best. And there has to be a way where we can talk about this chapter of our lives that is so meaningful and deep and a big part of us in a productive way at work. And so it's just a matter of continuing to talk about it and find ways to incorporate this really amazing part of our lives and work to make it more inclusive of who we are and what we bring to the table.
You know, there's a huge population in aviation that probably doesn't get enough credit for their hard work, but they live the exact same lifestyle that an airline pilot does, and that is our flight attendants. You know, the cabin crew. And it's a huge population of women, a lot of whom who have children. And I wonder what they're doing within their circles to support one another and whether we can model something off of that.
Yeah, 100%. Oh my goodness. There's so much to tap into that with flight attendants.
Yeah.
Very good. So in the beginning of becoming a mom, I went into it professionally acting like I was still very much the same person as before, putting on this illusion that nothing changed, but in reality, everything changed. My body, my mind, my time, my energy, it was all different than before. I had a child. That's life, right? We're supposed to evolve, but I struggled with this. And once I built the confidence to accept this new stage in my life, I was more at ease with myself. Sure enough, now everybody knows that I'm a mom, but did you find yourself in a similar position?
Well, again, you know, I got an early start. So I was in my 20s and everyone my age was out partying and doing all kinds of fun stuff, doing the things that you do in your 20s. And I wasn't. So it was pretty abrupt and immediate for me. And so by the time I was having my second child and certainly by my third, it was all I knew. I mean, I had just, mom was part of the resume, and I was used to doing it. I don't know if I'd gotten any better at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it wasn't a huge transition at that point. And so, but that really, you know, that really played into my perspective when I did start having access to more women in the Coast Guard, younger women who were thinking about having children or who were like feeling all of this anxiety about the planning, about, you know, what it was going to be like afterwards. For me, I was like, ah, you can do it, you know, because
yeah,
it's all I've been doing my whole adult life. So, right. Yeah, but obviously when I was young, my body definitely changed in unflattering yeah. ways, at least for that age group. And, you know, I was not walking around in a bikini when I was in my early 20s when everybody else was looking fabulous. And I walk around in a bikini now, though.
Now, there you go.
Get away with it now. But yeah, there are a lot of changes.
No. Yeah. Oh, goodness. As you progressed with your career and after you connected with these women in the Coast Guard to hear how they did it and heard their stories, did you find yourself eventually having a community to lean on or a group of people that would help you with motherhood and the different transitions?
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Good. Like, you know, once you make those connections, you realize that other people are having similar experiences. First of all, that's like, I like to call it therapy, you know, little commiseration, because you can, you have these shared experiences. But then also I just posted about this the other day. I had the good fortune, you know, we can fast forward to the third child, which is a whole separate set of circumstances when I had him. But I was at a unit that had several women, and one of whom is still a good friend. Well, they're all still good friends, but this one who had a baby while we were there, and her husband was in the Navy and was underway. And I had lived this as a junior, you know, enlisted person with a spouse who was gone all the time. And we need to make sure that we talk about my spouse soon, because he's the reason I've been able to do all this, honestly. But she, you know, she would have to stay on duty. And so I would take care of the baby on duty nights. And that was such a good feeling to me, because it was so important to me to model not only the fact that you could have children and have a career, but also that kind of supportive network. And I was grateful for the opportunity to support her and take care of her daughter, Amelia. And then, you know, she was very supportive of me, because I was pregnant at the same time, shortly after her. And so it was just nice to have, like once it gets better when you have people around you who share that experience. So,
I agree. Yeah. And speaking about spouses, I think when I first got married, you know, I just didn't think about, you know, the tough times. Like, how would we be compatible when the moments get tough? And you hear people talk about that, but for you to like really, when you're in the moment, like having a child and balancing schedules and just being tired and exhausted, you then learn, oh my gosh, it is so important in your spouse that you have someone that's going to help you get through it. You're both there to help each other get through it. And, you know, it's kind of an obvious answer, but if you can share how important your spouse was to you throughout all of this with your career and motherhood, and the importance of finding that person who's really gonna champion you and support you when the times are tough.
Yeah, I mean, I got a gem. I'm pretty lucky. I was very fortunate. I met my husband. He was in the Coast Guard. We navigated ships together. But he did his 4 years, and then he made the decision to get out of the Coast Guard. And that was his decision. Actually, he made that decision before we got really serious. And then he decided that he wanted to join me after I finished officer candidate school when I moved across the country. And it was kind of like a test run for us because, you know, I had been married before and it didn't work out. So we thought, well, let's extract ourselves from this environment where we have all these mutual friends and mutual experiences. And also, you know, I have my son with me and let's just see how it goes. And so we spent a year together living in Port Angeles. And then, you know, we went to flight school and decided to get married there. And it was a great decision. And so what it meant for us is compromise, a lot of compromise. I think he has done the majority of compromising over the years. He made the decision because he had been enlisted for 4 years to go back to school when we went to my first operational unit and we had 4 years in front of us at that unit. And so he did. He got his bachelor's degree. What he might have done if he didn't have the family is he might have gone to be a ship captain, you know, with the merchant fleet and sailed around the world because that's kind of the direction he was headed. He loves boats. He loves being underway. But he made a practical decision to get a degree in accounting. And then we moved here to Miami and he found a job as an entry-level accountant at a startup company. And he's been with that company for almost 16, 17 years now. Wow. When we moved away from Miami the first time, he let them know that he was going to be moving. And they said, well, would you work out of the house? And so he spent 12 years working for this company. Out of the house, he earned a master's in business administration. He earned his CPA. And so now he's vice president of finance and strategy at this company.
Wow.
So he was able to creatively build his own career, but with a lot of sacrifice. He wouldn't probably have stayed with that company that long.
Yeah.
And did everything like, you know, we women get a little up in arms when we see some gendered commercial that shows women like doing the laundry and doing the dishes.
Yeah.
He gets pissed off about that too. He's like, I do the laundry. I do the dishes. Why don't they ever show any men doing that?
That's too funny. Oh, wow.
So no, he's been amazing. Great. And he wanted me, I mean, the Coast Guard too, like, you know, it was stability. It was financial stability for us, you know, even though it required us to move around a lot and it required a lot of compromise on his part, career-wise, it also provided us like a pretty solid paycheck and the promise of retirement pay and medical coverage for the rest of my life. So it's all trade-offs, you know?
Right. Big compromise is what I've learned so far of almost 3 years of marriage is that you both have to go into it knowing that you are not going to get everything you want if you want to be happy and in the same boat.
Very
good. I want to
say more about that. You know, what we did start to find as we both kind of got more quote unquote important in our roles, both me in the Coast Guard and him with his job becoming a senior executive in a company, we found that everything always happened at once. You know, if he had like some critical meeting he had to go to, I of course had like an admiral who was gonna, I had to host at my unit and everything came crashing in at the same time. And that got pretty stressful and exhausting as the years went on. And so we were super excited when I had the opportunity to retire and it happened all the way up to the end. We were moving from Barbados. I was the senior defense official in Barbados. This is my last tour. Literally the week that we were packing out our house, I walked in on Monday morning and he said, "Hey, I got to go to New York this week." I was like, "Are you kidding me?" All the way to the bitter end. So,
you know, you're talking about like official roles here. And just between my husband and I found that you really have to plan for there to be a conflict of schedule, because 9 times out of 10, there will be, and you're just that much more prepared. So I think you brought up a really good point there is just to go in to it, knowing that, you know, there may be a conflict.
Yeah.
Kind of pivoting a little bit here, did you ever come across people, and I'm talking about both men and women, in your career who doubted your ability to perform because of the responsibilities that you had as a mom?
Well, I talked earlier about not wanting to show up to my second unit with a big belly, right?
Yeah.
And so the first pregnancy, I told you I came off the ship, I went to this training program, and then I went to a land billet. And by the end of that year on land, I had people say to me, well, we didn't think, you know, we were very impressed with your performance. When you showed up here pregnant, we didn't expect much of you. And like literally said this to me, thankfully in a complimentary way at the end of me proving myself that yes, I still have a brain. Yeah. Just because I'm pregnant doesn't mean, you know, I'm an invalid or can't perform. You can't necessarily, not everybody can fly all the way up to the end, but you can do other things. And so, so I was conscious of that. And in my last pregnancy, I was the first woman who was a chief pilot in the Coast Guard to get pregnant during that role.
Incredible. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't great. That's not
I can imagine
what you're looking for from a chief pilot. But it happened, and I made the best of it. I supported the team as much as I could while I was out of the cockpit and then got back in. So.
Yeah. Do you see that there is room for more leadership of women who are pregnant? You know, just because I think it sends a message that you really, women are capable of serving in these roles, and it serves as an example for the unit, for the company, and to other women that, you know, just because you are pregnant, it shouldn't limit you from working in these types of positions.
Well, I have a few things on that. So first of all, you know, every company, every service has their own regulations about what you can and can't do while you're pregnant. And most of those regulations are set in place to protect the mother. Some of them are wacky. We had this one quote in our manual that referred to a study that was, I think, done in like the 80s or 90s. It was an Army medical study on chicken embryos. And from that very small study group, this quote in our manual said that flying helicopters may affect the hearing of a child. And it was absurd because the study, it just, from my perspective, was not valid, but it was being used by leadership in some cases, because the decision in the military to continue to be able to fly operationally is between the flight surgeon, so the medical officer, the commanding officer, and the actual mother. So it's like everybody has to sign off on this. And there were commands that were using this as a reason to keep women out of the cockpit. Thankfully, was in a position to influence that policy later on when I went back, you know, after graduate school.
Amazing.
And did an admin tour at headquarters where I was a personnel manager, and we were able to get that taken out because that was absurd. So, but you know, you have to follow the policy or do what you can to change the policy, which is, you know, what we worked on. My girlfriend and I, so I went to this personnel management job. We were the assignment officers for all of the pilots in the Coast Guard, 1,200 pilots, two aviation assignment officers. Both of us were women. Both of us were moms. And I went into the office my first day, I was like, Francis, this is what we're going to do. Every time we introduce ourselves at any unit, because we had to travel around to all of the different units in the Coast Guard and talk to them about their career progression and assignments and stuff like that. When we introduce ourselves, we're going to introduce our aircraft qualifications and the fact that we have a child at home. And we're just going to like make that a normal thing across the Coast Guard. Just like, you know, I fly an H-65 Dolphin helicopter and I have two children. One is, you know, one is 12 and one is two. Boom. And then move on. Well, we did that. And our first road show, we showed up to a unit that had several women, which was unusual. I think they had five women there, but not all of them had, you know, babies in their plans. Like that's not something they wanted. And the commanding officer, very well-meaning man, piped up in the middle of our conversation, in the middle of our presentation, and said, absolutely, every woman should have babies. And blah, blah, blah. Like it was crazy. And the women came up to us afterwards and they were like, he does this all the time. She was this one girl who was like, I don't want kids. And he keeps calling me into the office asking me when I'm having kids. So he took it a little too far. So.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Oh wow. That's funny. Yeah. Are there any changes that you would like to see in the future?
There have been, you know, in my service, there have been a lot of things that have been implemented that are supportive to women and men. But, you know, we're speaking specifically about pregnancy and women that help. So first of all, when I was young and I told you like half my paycheck was going to childcare, there are there are rated scales for childcare subsidy in the military, which is wonderful. So they help subsidize childcare, which is a big deal. They also have a program for temporary separation. So you can take 2 years off of the Coast Guard and then hopefully come back in. It's not without some effect on your career. It does affect your career, but you can do that. I mean, these are the things that, you know, other cultures have figured out, other countries have figured out, paid leave for parenthood, or, you know, the opportunity to like hold your place in line. Like, I guess for the airlines, you know, they get their line number or whatever. You know, I don't know what their policies are, but holding that line number so that somebody can take the time that they need to, you know, get their home life under control and then get back in later, because they have all the training and all that experience. That doesn't go away. You have to refresh
exactly.
it, but you still have all of that. So it's a waste. Right. It's just a good business decision to create those opportunities to allow 100% people to step out and come back in.
And you know, it's interesting because we're kind of viewing women through the lens of how we would view men taking a break. And the question has to be asked, who is raising, nurturing, and teaching values to the next generation of pilots, of astronauts, of politicians? You know, children need that nurturing. And this kind of leads into my next question with maternity leave. You know, I see it with my son. The more time that I'm with him, I interact with him, give him love, I can just see him growing, feeling more confident in his actions. And so it's like, are we doing ourselves justice by looking at women or treating them the way that we would treat a man who would take some time off for a medical purpose or, you know, whatever. And I just think it needs to be reevaluated because we haven't a generation here that we're trying to raise, and we need to just view women and men the way that they are, you know, versus trying to put everyone through one category. Would you agree?
So I get a little uncomfortable when we get into gendered conversations like this because, you know, my husband carried my daughter around in a front carrier for the first year of her life. He was in school full time and he nurtured her. You know, she had that love and nurturing from her father. So I don't see it as, you know, only mom can do this. Yeah, only mom can produce the milk. But you can pump the milk, you know, and dad can give the milk. Like there are very few things that are so gender specific. And so I hear where you're going. In fact, another quick story. After my third child, again, I was the operations officer, so the chief pilot. at my unit. And every year there's an annual conference for all of the chief pilots. I was still on maternity leave. I had had, my baby was 5 weeks old and the conference was happening. So we all got on a plane and we flew to Colorado and I walked in and I brought the baby because I was nursing still. So everybody was in the hotel room. I went up to nurse. I came back down. And in this meeting, a senior man stood up and asked the person who had the job that I used to have, that assignment officer job, and said, when are we going to stop assigning large groups of women, large groups meaning like four or five, to the same unit? Because what if they all get pregnant and all go med down? And I'm the only woman in the room in an operational position. My uniform is probably soaked with milk because I just came down from nursing. You know, I'm still on maternity leave. And I piped up and I said, well, when are we going to stop allowing our crews to play basketball and sports? Because I have more pilots out of the cockpit for sports injuries than all of the women combined, you know, in the Coast Guard. Bravo. So just stop the BS, please.
Wow.
I don't know whether it, so it's just something needs to change culturally. I don't like the idea of describing it using gender terms, because I do think that men and women can support and nurture our children. And so, and we have to understand that children are our future. And so in all cultures, we should be valuing that, not just because there are men or just because there are women. Everyone should value that. And the good news for me is that I did work with a lot of men who were like that.
Oh, good.
Not the majority, but a lot.
You know, I'm trying to be a little careful gender-wise too. I think I do it because maybe that's how I was raised. With my Afghani roots, it's very much, you know, anything to do with the kids, it's always the mom, no matter what. And I realized this a lot when I became a mom. I started to hear how if there was something unwell with the child, it was always the mom's fault. Everyone was so quick to put blame on the mom. And now, as a mom, I'm like, well, wait a minute. There are two people here. Like, I'm married. There's a father in this picture.
Right.
It can't just all fall on me. You know, we need to look at both parents equally. And that also goes to responsibilities too. That language, I personally need to work on it because I see the difference and I almost get offended when people come to me and they're like, but aren't you the mom? I'm like, yeah, but it took two of us to have this child. And
can I make a recommendation?
Of course.
I pulled these out because I know you're going to ask me about books later. I am in the middle of this. So I can't give you a full review of it, but I am reading this book called X Plus Y, A Mathematician's Manifesto for Rethinking Gender. And she lays it out really clearly about how the gender conversation divides us more than it unites us and how it really isn't helping us make advances. So that might help you kind of, you know, shift your paradigm a little bit.
But I have to say this new phase in our lives, this new generation, you know, we're changing the way we're doing things. And it's an exciting time and it's important to know how to address these things as we move forward. Yeah. So I appreciate that recommendation. Thank you.
Sure.
Let's see here. So if you could go back to young Liz, what advice or words would you share with her now knowing what you know about motherhood and balancing a career?
I would tell her to buy all of the same color socks for your kids, period.
Hey, that's great advice.
No, they were just life hacks that I figured out as I went along.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. Like, do things to simplify your daily life because that's going to save you time and frustration. And I would just tell myself to calm down a little bit, you know, like I was working really, really hard because I was, you know, a lot of it was out of fear for my child and my child's future. And I just wanted everything to go well. And so I took it very seriously. Probably would have calmed down a little bit.
Oh, that is great advice. So tell us more about the Aviatrix Book Club.
Okay, so the Aviatrix Book Club and the Aviatrix Book Review podcast and website.
Yes.
In November of last year, I decided that I was going to launch this effort that I'd had in my head to review all of the books ever written about women in aviation. And I was going to start that in 2021. And I thought it would be awfully fun if I had a few people to read and discuss the books with. And so I reached out in the fora that we were talking about in Facebook earlier to see if anybody would be interested in making a book club. And it was crazy. Like, it was nuts. 40 people in the first 5 minutes and 600 people in the first week. And so... Wow. So I created this Facebook group and it has 1400 members now, and we kind of got together and brainstormed how we would make this actually work like a regular book club where you could actually sit and talk to people. And I created a reading list for 2021, all books that I wanted to read, and I tried to mix them up you know, with genre and aircraft types and military, civilian, historical, and contemporary. So we have a nice mix of all books that I hadn't read before, with the exception of one. And so we read, and anybody can host a book discussion, and anyone can join it. And we've been doing this for, we're on month 8 now. And it's really cool because I have met hundreds of women from all over the world. The writers who have written these books are networking. And so I've made so many friends who are also writers. So I get to talk about writing and flying and reading, all my favorite things. So, like, you know, I'm making new friends, and it's exactly what I needed to kind of inspire and fuel my writing, which is all focused on writing about children and young adults. And I also interview the authors every month, and I post those on podcasts. We talk in the first part about the book, and then we talk in the second portion, separate recording, about writing. And that is to encourage all the women out there to share their stories and hopefully provide them with, you know, tips and advice on how to do that, things that we didn't know and had to learn on our own.
Can you share what the book that you're thinking of writing, or maybe you are writing it, what it's about, or is it too soon?
No, it's not too soon to just talk about it generally. I have two works in progress, one that's pretty close, like I need another revision on it, and one that'll be another year or two before I'm finished with it. They're both about young women who learn how to fly, one in a civilian context, and this girl is mentored by a Haitian American Navy veteran who is an aerobatic pilot. And I love this character, and I'm excited to put her out in the world. And then my other one is in a military context where a circus performer is recruited for a military flying program. So looking forward to getting those out there someday.
I look forward to reading it someday. That sounds like a great story, both of them.
Thank you.
And finally, this is a question that I ask all the guests on the show. So Liz, what is the best piece of advice you have received as a woman in aviation?
The best piece of advice that I received didn't come from a woman in aviation. It came from a senior officer in the Coast Guard when I was junior. And she wrote an endorsement for me to go to officer candidate school. And she sat me down and she said to me, and this is a woman who had joined the Coast Guard in the 1970s and had come up on her own. She ultimately became an admiral. She said, "Women don't know how to network like the men do. And you need to change that." And so that has been at the core of everything that I've done since.
And I don't want to drag this on, but I have to ask, what did you find to be the biggest difference of how men network versus how women network?
Well, the example that she used was like, hey, the guys go out and play golf together. And okay. they find ways to support each other. Women in the military at the time were so isolated and were trying so hard to conform to and to not stand out that they not only would like not intentionally network, they didn't want to be a part of anything that's had the tag women on it, because now they're just okay. like standing out even more as women. But in yeah. some cases, they were kind of like, my girlfriend used the example of crabs in a basket, you know, climbing mm-hmm. over each other to get out instead oh, wow. of supporting one another. And so
I see. Yeah,
really like okay. to be focused on bringing those behind us along.
Yeah, that's really good advice. All right, Liz. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking to you about motherhood. Keep up the great work that you're doing with your book club, the great writing that you're doing, and it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you, Shasta. So excited about this podcast. I hope you enjoy doing it first and foremost, because that's the thing that I've found with mine is that I get a lot out of it myself. And so if nobody else listens to it, that I at least got to have that conversation and it's awesome. But I hope it does spectacularly well. And thank you for taking the time to do it.
Thank you.